This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
That's how I'm confused.
I'm so confused.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. That's a power man. With an X.
Hey, it's
all
another...
underground alternative. All the time. Oh, sorry, Steve.
It's Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 395. How about that? It's the podcast sponsored by nobody. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Kevin Whirlwind X in Canada, and Phil in Canada, and Andrew the LA Rabbit, not in Canada.
It can't be that many episodes. Man, that's a lot of independent comic book noise.
It was probably like a two-minute show before we got a hold of it.
Well, we must have been recording like weekly before or something. Daily.
You can find Indie Comic Book Noise on Twitter at Indie Comic Book N, and we have a Facebook page. You can listen to us on our sister show, Marvel Noise, where we talk about the Marvel books we're reading, and you can find show archives over on IndieComicBookNoise.com. This is also the podcast with a funny schedule. Sorry about that. Oh, and there's cussing allowed, as is moderate substance abuse. So, listener beware.
Wait, what? We got rid of the partial nudity warning as well.
Gather around the iPad, kids. Time to turn the webcam off. Well, before we get into anything, I got to share with you guys my lament, but also gracious thanks for the career of one of my favorite creators, who I am fond of saying takes up two spots on my illustrator Mount Rushmore Hall of Fame, and that is the recently announced retirement of Bernie Wrightson. Bernie has been dealing with health issues and had some brain surgery before Christmas time, and was having some vertigo and some falls and stuff, and had another bleed, and he's got some left side paralysis and some weakness and stuff that's making his ability to draw near impossible at this point, although he can still sign his name. So you Kickstarter backers, hang in there. And he's got to retire from attending cons and stuff now. Moving around is going to be difficult, but good news is no cognitive impairments of any kind, so hopefully Bernie can be comfortable and relax and enjoy some time with Liz and enjoy getting thanks from all of his fans. And feel free to send him a Facebook message or a real letter if you can. Bernie Wrightson, one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, I saw that on the Twitter machine the other day and was like you say, I mean, it's kind of sad, but I'm also glad he's, you know, he's not dead. So that's good.
Exactly. Just retired.
Yeah, like we all hope to do someday.
Hell of a career.
I
want to
be forced into early retirement. That's what I saw those commercials. They were trying to show all the bad things that could happen to you. And then I'm like, well, that doesn't sound so bad.
I'm looking at Bernie's work and I'm thinking it's got like the power of Kirby, you know, the eerie creepiness of Ditko, you know, in no way similar to, but I mean, as far as it's how it connects to the, at least my eye. And then the wonky postures and stuff of like Jim Davis, and then that fine ink line of like Franklin Booth that really, I mean, Bernie's work is so Victorian and horrific and grotesque, and man, love his stuff. And I think his weakest stuff is the stuff where he delves into the superhero universes, but at the same time, any Bernie is good Bernie.
Yeah, and just that that wave of people that showed you could put a ton of detail in a comic book page and it still comes through, even though it's all shrunk down and printed on newsprint.
We need a Bernie Wrightson artist edition. Not just one of these portfolios, but the real shebang. get a bunch of his creepy stuff if you can, you know? That'd be cool. All right, what you guys been reading?
Reading?
Don't make
I've been
me,
watching things.
Don't make what? Me talk about Bernie the whole episode, because I could.
Oh, I thought you were supposed to be watching stuff, too. Not just reading comics. Like,
well,
you
I did
watch
see,
comics.
I did see two indie comic things, a TV show and a movie. I saw the first episode of Riverdale, which was complete trash. That's how you're gonna talk about, because I was complete trash. It's like the OC, basically.
Well, and it's on the CW. Who would have thought that? Who could see that coming?
What? No, you know where it's on here?
Oh, it's not on the set. Yeah, it's a CW show, so everyone's gonna be. It's gonna have a look and a feel to it.
I thought that's what you LA types liked.
Like Dawson's Creek.
I don't like that. That's why I can't watch any of that stuff. I have a hard yeah. time.
But
I barely
last
get
episode,
through Supergirl.
Or a couple episodes ago, we heard you talk about Twilight.
Wasn't me. It was Kevin's comic.
We watched the movie. And I also saw Casper for the first time.
Really?
Which wait, the movie?
Yeah.
Like the one from maybe 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think about then. Yeah, the 90s, I imagine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't know if there was maybe one from the 60s or something.
No. That's the only one I know of.
Was Lori Loughlin in that?
I don't
who
know
the girl?
Who that is. The young girl? It's Christine Ritchie or whatever her name is. The girl that looks like E.T.
And then the mom?
The mom was dead.
Oh, well. I thought Casper's the dead one.
Yeah,
he's the good little
too.
Dead kid.
It's the ghost.
But yeah,
of
that
Richard.
One I enjoyed. But Riverdale, though, was complete trash. Don't watch that. I can see Kevin.
But I had to check it out, though, because I remember Andrew saying he wanted, you know, he was into the whole, you know, he went on anyways about murdering and or drugs or, you know, Jughead being in, he's in some weird thing. So I would say some of that Riverdale kind of.
Like the writers are on drugs?
Kind of fit that category casting. Of.
I had no, it's on the CW has. Like a look, it's what turned me off of like Arrow and some of them other shows. Although I'm still hanging on to Supergirl a little bit, but it's
I like
just
Supergirl. The actor's good.
It's yeah. like an aesthetic that just kind of leaves me cold.
Well, I think it's a Netflix original here, though, Andrew. So that
really?
Might be different,
huh?
Yeah.
There was a TV movie. Now, God, it's to be 30 years ago, maybe Return to Riverdale or something like that. Yeah. That had. The one redeeming thing, it was like Archie coming back to Riverdale decade later or something, but the one redeeming thing I remember was Lauren Holly played Betty, and mm-hmm. she was awfully bountiful in the breast area, and they made a point to, they had a whole big thing where, like, she was hiding in the closet, and then Veronica shows up, and they're both trying to seduce Archie, and he's doing the, like, Jack Tripper, Three's Company thing of, like, trying to, like, manage two dates at the same time kind of thing, you know? But
the 1990 Archie to Riverdale and back again. Comedy. Yeah. 1 hour, 40 minute running time.
Comedy. Yeah, I would say this is definitely not a comedy. It's like Archie's making out with his teacher and all like weird stuff is going on in this show.
Mrs. B?
They didn't throw it back to the original one where he's some weird buckstooth kid.
Well, and they keep on making a point that Archie has abs and is good
they
looking
took, like,
and everything now.
They took like a blonde kid and it looks like they just spray painted his hair a bit.
It doesn't look you can tell like they're not it looks like it's not their natural hair color or anything.
Speaking of Archie, where's my fucking horror line? I've been waiting a year now.
Yeah, it's pretty hurt.
I hear some more is on the way.
Yeah, one issue a year ain't going to cut it.
Why aren't they cashing in on this?
I don't know. I checked. Hasn't it been like 4 years for like 10 issues?
Why aren't they totally cashing in on that?
I know.
It.
They
well,
had so
I
many
know
people.
Like he's working on Riverdale, like the guy who writes Afterlife with Archie, but
that's
it just seems at some point it just seems like you're just not cashing in on a series that's popular you can be making a lot of money off of.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
Yeah, but I think they've learned that the myth of the comic book crossover doesn't. I don't really know that it's that big
the
a boom to
well.
The comic book. No, no, I'm not saying it doesn't do well, but the idea that, oh, we have a TV show. I mean, I think if it's one-to-one, like maybe The Walking Dead or something, where it's one comic and one show, it's a bit of an easier transition. But like a spin-off Archie product, I don't know that the TV show is going to generate people running down, especially because it's a different tone. Although Kevin's saying it's maybe more similar in tone. But I still bet you it's pretty different from the horror line.
Well, it's funny because they're launching a Riverdale comic as well.
Yeah, that I'm not surprised. But I think this is more, I think they're trying to more cash in on TV-wise, on like the things like, you know, Grimm and Once Upon a Time and that kind of thing. It's like Archie, to the crowd who still knows who Archie is almost like a little fairy tale. And it's like, all right, let's tear down that stuff on TV. And, you know, the TV is like in the late 80s where comic books was, where it's, you know, it wants to start tearing down itself rather than taking itself so seriously.
Well, it's funny, like the show starts with a murder, so it's sort of like Twin Peaks-ish in that way.
It's well, the brother question, and sister that sleep together, you know.
I wonder about is who is today's Archie reader? The only people I know that read Archie actually either read the horror or read like old timey Archie. I don't know people that read, like, I don't know if it's still like a young person book or if. When the fans locked in, like I would say superheroes are your people in your 30s and 40s, essentially.
Not anymore.
I mean, not that there aren't other people, but the big block are those people when it was hugely popular. It was hugely popular in the 80s, and then it was hugely popular in the 90s. I mean, just look at the sales.
It was
Archie's characters, though, too.
And Archie's distribution plan when we were kids, at least, was major to me reading it because... I always wanted to be reading a comic, you know, and you could find Archie in the craziest of places, right? You know, your mom's at line at the grocery store, and there it is. You're at a department store, there it is. It was all around Archie, those little digests and stuff at the supermarket checkout line, and you'd
still
come home
them
with a comic and read it.
They're still in my grocery stores.
Yeah, I was going to say, Steve, were you lining up for it's not there anymore? Because it's never moved here.
I also don't know, like, how much of that is reprint material or... Archie, that house style has been pretty locked for quite a while. I mean, it's obviously more from, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s, but probably from, like, the late 70s, early 80s. I'd say that's a pretty consistent look for the last 40 years. Notwithstanding, like, the new reboot or whatever.
Everyone's had their little spin on it, though. Like, I can certainly tell the difference between, you know, the Dan DiCarlo era and, you know, Dan Parent, who I kind of think his look is the house look. You know, his version of the house look is the standard for the last, I think, 15 years now or so, however long he's been working for Archie. But, yeah.
I don't know if I could pick Dan Parent out from Stan Goldberg, though. Although the one Archie guy I know does not like Stan Goldberg. Dan DiCarlo's like the last Archie artist he's interested in.
Bob Montana.
But, yeah, I mean, well, the other thing is when they're digest size.
Oh, I love those artwork. Digest size in the olden days. Like, I loved, I used to get the Ninja Turtle ones all the time and the DC ones.
I would just buy the actual comics. Like,
oh, I have the Ditko Spider-Man paperbacks. I do love them, but... My preferred format is a larger one. But yeah, I carried those. They had two paperbacks collecting like the first 12 issues, I think. I think I ended up rebuying them on eBay. My fondness for it. But one of those Marvel books I read was so funny. Like it was actually like a spinoff company that was ripping off Marvel, but it was owned by the same people type of thing. So I guess those books maybe weren't such a great deal, but they have all kinds of weird, I think it was from that book publishing one that came out a few years ago about Marvel. It's funny to read all the kind of the hustles and everything those guys are always doing to avoid paying taxes or getting one over on each other.
I used to like the Mad Magazine paperbacks. Anytime my mother had to drag me to the mall or she had to go to the mall to go to a department store or something, it's like, can I go to the bookstore and scour the shelves for any new Mad paperback that I hadn't had already.
I loved the superhero special they always did.
I used to like the little photo novels of the movies too, you know, that would have like, you know, major summer blockbusters, but with, you know, with panels made from cut scene, you know, scenes from the actual movies, and then they'd throw in word balloons and stuff.
It's funny that they do that with cartoons nowadays.
Yeah.
My older brothers and sisters kept that, so I read some of them, but the problem was I didn't know any of the movies because it was all stuff from, you know, the like late 60s and things I'd never seen, so you're trying to read the parody of it.
But I had like Jaws and Jaws 2 and, you know, the Close Encounters and Superman and Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They used
that
to do
too,
them of
but
the Star Trek episodes. I had Trouble with Tribbles and a few of the other ones.
But I also had these ones that from, like, before my time, you know, Mad looks at the 60s.
Oh, the Mad stuff. Ones, you mean? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought you were talking about
the where
photo.
You're like, whoa. No, no, the Mad ones where I'm like, oh, man, I don't, this looks pretty funny, but I'm missing whatever the pop culture thing of the moment was has long since passed me by.
My rule for the Mad stuff is it's pretty much got to have some Don Martin in it.
Or Sergio. Although in the paperbacks, his margin stuff really gets tiny when they shrink that down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you guys do anything for Image Day?
Image Day. Yeah, I don't think anyone came to that many places. I noticed it wasn't in every state either, so no. And comics didn't even really come in this week. It's funny enough, a box of comics that were supposed to go to my comic shop ended up in Winnipeg, so not so many comics this week.
Wow, that is a weird turn of events.
And you're not going to go to Winnipeg to fetch those comics, that's for sure.
You're not a diehard fan, then.
Yeah.
I don't know how far that would be for you to go to Winnipeg, Kevin. Maybe it's just the other side of the road.
Well, it's like Steve is like, what? You've never been out west? And I'm like, no. Sometimes when you're in Ontario, like you'll travel for like 20 hours and you're not out of the province. Like you're just nowhere. You just keep on going. And you didn't get anywhere.
You want to
could
see
be through
fields.
20 like European
fields.
Countries by then.
You can't go straight anywhere from where you are either, Kevin. There's no like closest distance between two points is a straight line. There's nothing that even approximates. Like you got to go east to go west or west to go north, or it's all crazy. Hey, I've been reading the latest offering from thepanelsyndicate.com. Remember those guys? It's BKV, Brian K. Vaughan, and Marcos Martin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Be reprinted.
Well,
they're still
never be in print, you mean, Kevin.
As single comics. They did do a hardcover of that first
Private Eye.
Private Eye.
I thought none of that stuff was supposed to ever be in print.
They said they're not going to do
that's
a.
Right.
They said they're not going to print this current one. We'll see.
Oh, let's not take their word for it.
Yeah. I don't know if you printed the first one. I don't know how much people are going to believe you on the second thing.
But how?
I don't know. We all seem to believe it.
How is that a selling point, though, or how does it even matter in my mind? Because you know what their pay model is at thepanelsyndicate.com. It's pay any price. So if you want to pay 50 cents for an issue, if you want to pay $3 for an issue, if you want to pay nothing 1 month, then I'll get you next month double or whatever, you can do that. And, you know, it's digital comics in the sense that they are landscape, but it's not this layer stuff. They are fixed pages, which I like. So you're just getting landscape pages. And I like the personal letters pages that they do in their books as well. And they answer their letters and talk about stuff. Very Eric Larson, Savage Dragon-y in a lot of ways. They are 3 issues in the new series, which is called Barrier. And Barrier follows the story at first of Liddy, a girl who lives in Far Texas, which is a border town, far down there in Texas. And she's a widow who won't give up her ranch land, despite threats of aggression and all kinds of unsavory fellows coming through and drug lords and border issues and all that sort of stuff. And the Border Patrol turns a blind eye to it all and won't be helpful. So she's really on her own, sort of patrolling her own land with a shotgun just to protect herself and her animals, which keep getting slaughtered. Then there's Oscar, who is a Honduran, doesn't speak any English, and he's on this epic journey to sneak across the Mexican-U.S. border illegally, and the fence he hops is the fence into Liddy's backyard, but it's barbed wire, and he injures himself, and she comes upon him, and he doesn't speak English, and she's scared of him, and he's scared of her, and then they're just at this standoff, and then they get abducted by aliens, and that's the end of the first issue.
That sounds cool. But why didn't they use Google Translate?
Right. So the second issue is a lot like the first. Well, actually, it's completely different, but it does again follow Liddy and Oscar's individual stories until at a certain point they cross paths again. But this time it's aboard the alien vessel as they're kind of experiencing what's around them in the landscape and trying to survive. The third issue, Brian K. Vaughan boasts, is the first silent issue that either he or Martine have ever attempted. And it's because the voices of the aliens that they encounter burst their eardrums. And they can't hear each other or anything. So they just got blood coming out of their ears. And the whole issue is silent because we're experiencing what they're experiencing. It's intriguing. The colors are great. Amongst Vincenti again, and it's cool.
What do the aliens look like in it? Like,
are they
the normal kind with the round head and all that?
No, they are. They are extremely colorful and very highly detailed, with a lot of little tendrily type of like villi that all have individual markings on them that almost make me think of like Mexican Indian type of, you know, like noodling along the edge of pottery and that kind of stuff, or drapery, that sort of business. They're really cool. But then they also have so many pieces to them all over them, and different plates and stuff that they evoke sort of that like an over-armored samurai in some ways too. But they float, and it's crazy. And they make word balloons. They're not really balloons. They're kind of jagged, but all that's in them is like a pastel color. They're blank. And it bursts their eardrums. It's crazy. Obviously, BKV and Martine are great storytellers, so it's well done. As the story was first being told, I'm like, I don't think this is subject matter I'm really that interested in. The girl's not particularly cute. You know, there's a lot of Spanish language in print because you can't understand what the Hondurans are speaking, and they're coming across the border and dealing with people and stuff, and then they throw the sci-fi twist in, and then it's like, whoa, okay, now we're seeing these people pulled out of their element, and now they have to figure out, you know,
look at you, brainwashed by Marvel, saying that the girl isn't cute. Why can't she be a normal person?
Oh, she can be. That's just fine. But I certainly, if you want to catch my eye, make her cute. If you want me to put down my $3 or whatever, making the girl cute is definitely a hook.
Fair case.
The comic books seem like one of the last places where it's like you're allowed. I mean, if artists can't be inspired to portray the human female form as beautiful, or even in an exaggerated form artistically, then we've really lost. This is like post Joe's Garage stuff at that point.
Mm-hmm. He just wanted to stick in a jab at Valiant. That's all he wanted to do, Phil.
What's Valiant?
Company. You even see Liddy naked, and it's like, I don't want to see her naked. But it works for the story, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it sounds like something I would like for sure. And since it'll for sure be coming out in trade, I'll get it.
And you can always get back issues too at any time, right? So it works.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. That is a nice thing about, and I'm really pleased, I mean, all joking aside about the print thing, that kept up, because I really thought it was just going to be that private eye thing. I didn't think, you know, years later they'd still be doing out new titles and everything.
I never did read Private Eye, but I definitely, if I ever see it around, it's something I'd pick up.
Oh, it's good. And I wouldn't read it in print necessarily. I really like it backlit with the way that the color palette is.
Okay.
And my next offering is going to be the other book that PanelSyndicate.com has. So let's hear from someone else first, though.
Well, I've got an Image book that I think Kevin has.
Uh-oh.
To celebrate Image Day. And it's Curse Words.
I don't have this.
Wait, I thought you were talking about it on the Twitter machines.
Oh, he talks
about it. It was, people were trying to, I guess they thought Curse Words was the next Seven to Eternity, which was the next God Country. So, yeah, no Curse Words for me.
Wow.
Well, it seems like there's like, you'll have a big Kevin's book or the next the saga, like people are trying to recapture, like, oh, what's the next hit book going to be? So it's like the next book that came out that got extra sales because everyone thought that was going to be the next. And then it's like, oh, not really so far.
Oh, so Kevin Lane, well, maybe I shouldn't talk about it then if it's a bad book. I don't want to.
No, it might be a good book. But the reason I couldn't acquire said book, well, I should say I could have pre-ordered it, but,
Are you sure it's not in Winnipeg?
Pre-order it, and then there was some kind of, like, rampant speculation thing going on, and it's like, well, then you're definitely not going to be able to acquire it type of thing. Like, I guess digitally, yeah, technically, but I don't know. I've fallen back in love pretty badly with the physical end of things.
Are you sure that your copy... are fun. Are you sure your copy isn't stuck in Winnipeg?
No, I think that's where Archer and Armstrong and Deadly Class are, though.
So why don't we let Andrew tell us whether it's any good or not before you?
Well, it looks interesting. I've like heard about it.
And tell us that only the elite can enjoy it.
I got the regular at the shop. They had the Ryan Brown and the Scotty Young, and all power to Scotty Young. I hope he makes $1 billion, but I'm sort of done with that kind of thing. So I'm like, I'm sticking with the Ryan Brown cover.
You know what I've seen? Like the Scotty Young cover? It's like those action figure covers are becoming like the next thing. I always, like, that's, whenever there's a variant cover of something, it's always like an action figure thing.
Yeah, yeah. Noted. Well, it just feels like a trend reaches peak point, and I'm like, okay, it was fun for the first 1,000 times, but at some point you feel like you've reached what I'm going to get out of it. But, well, hey, man,
think
keep
about
making
too,
them things.
In the indie world, they're playing off of what the Big Two does as well, that some of these trends are started by the Big Two, and then it's like now it's the indie world's turn to goof on it. You know what I mean? It's like if we're going to see these fake action figures of different X-Men or something as variant X-Men covers over at Marvel, then it's going to be funny for, someone to do one of the Flaming Carrot. You know what I mean? and see what that would look like.
I want the next thing from them, though, Steve. I don't want them to react to the Big Two. I want them to create the... Unless that's what you were just... When you were working at Marvel, like what you really wanted to do is when you got your own thing to do something like that, I guess.
Yeah, there's room for satire, though. But I hear
And I think it's key that it's an alternate cover. So it's like, it's for the people that want, like, that's your jam, you run out and go get it. But for the rest of us, Winnipeg. We have our regular covers. Yeah, the Winnipeg people. So it's Charles Soule, he writes literally 50,000 comics a month, but his indie creds are like letter 44. He also does some work for some other companies that we don't talk about. Marvel and DC.
Oh, that's what you meant. I thought you meant that. Okay, never mind.
But Kevin, you read letter 44. You liked it, so I'm surprised you're really hating on Charles Soule. Ryan Brown's artist. Killers by... And, it's okay, Kevin. You can hate on comics. And the colors, I think it's interesting. It's Ryan Brown and Jordan Boyd.
Huh. Oh, I saw some good Ryan Brown hate out there this week.
Ryan Brown came to prominence with his God Hates Astronauts. It's probably the big book for him. So it's sort of a stream of consciousness, absurdist look. But I really like his art. I remember him before that for the Magic comic he did.
I was going to say, you can't say I hate him, because I have Blast Furnace Recreational Thief, the first volume, up on my shelf right now. So
I do have, I did get Blast Furnace in New York at his desk. He wasn't there. It's kind of sad. I'm like, oh, he's not here. So I bought it from whoever was watching this table. But no, it was Charles Soule that you hate. But this is a crazy a world where it's our regular world, but there's a magician in it. And he's got this big beard and sunglasses, and he's out granting people's wishes. But when he grants this one kind of annoying guy his wish, it draws attention from this other magic user that comes from his other land. And they do a big magical battle, including like a double page spread with the title Curse Words, and like the one guy charging at the other one. So if you're familiar with Ryan Brown's kinetic style, he really has a sense of the story and the images move forward quickly, which I really like. And Charles Soule facilitates that. And the storytelling, you know, Ryan knows how to tell the story, so there's no problem there. But it's you find out the backstory of this wizard, and he came from this other dimension. But apparently he was maybe coming here for not such great purposes, but then he got kind of seduced by living the life and being this cool wizard guy. So it ends with the people from his home dimension found out, and they're going to come after him, potentially. And he has a showdown in this big, I think it's a baseball stadium or football, some kind of sporting event. I'm pretty sure it's baseball. I don't really, not really much of a sporting guy when you get right down to it.
How do you not know this?
I don't know.
Aren't you an NFL season ticket holder?
Yeah. If it's not the NFL,
what?
It's not a sport I follow. But yes, I guess technically it is baseball because they have a baseball glove and a baseball. But maybe it's some, I don't know, other version of baseball I'm not familiar with.
In football, you wear a helmet. In baseball, you wear a cap.
Exactly. Exactly. So maybe it's something that, maybe it's cricket. For all I know, do they use baseball gloves in cricket? I don't know, but it's in
mitts, I think.
I think maybe if it was in Canada, you could maybe say
as opposed to New York City.
But I thought you divorced all ties to British things, so that you definitely wouldn't have cricket.
So hey, it's not my fault. You people still bow to the Queen. But the big, so it ends with we don't know, like some big event happens at the end, and so where's he come from? They're going to send people after him. We're going to learn more of his backstory. So they have all kinds of, you know, Ryan Brown and Charles Soule seem to be having a lot of fun with it. I'm not sure. I think actually it's probably going to read better in bigger chunks because of the sort of it's not Kevin's stopwatch thing at all. Like, there's a lot of content and it moves well, but I just think that because the story is kind of all over the place. Sort of like reading God Hates Astronauts, I like reading it in bigger chunks than in shorter chunks, because sometimes some parts of it, when the story kind of went away, I wasn't that interested in
anymore for the next part of the story. It's just better in trade always, I find.
Well, it's also an image book, so it won't be just a month, Phil. But had to get a little slam in there.
Jeez, no comment from Steve. Where you want to get your slam in is after the first arc, and then people say, you've got so much momentum, why are you taking a 6-month break or a 3-month break between issue 4 and issue 5? You should just continue.
Well, that's the model. And then you take a week off, and then you put out the trade.
There's that whole indie model that Image and some of the other, I think, indie companies push too, where you take a month off, and then you take the trade month off. The month that the trade of the first arc comes out too, and then you come back. So it's like you end up, like you said, with almost a 3-month break.
Yeah, I would prefer that rather than having no schedule.
Well, sometimes also they got their other projects that they want to jump into, you know what I mean?
Unacceptable.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I like Ryan Brown. I like that they have all these funny things at the end, you know. Who or what is Margaret? You'll find out. What does Syzygy want to destroy our world? Why? Who are the Cardinals? Why are they so desperate to party? What happened to that baseball stadium? You know, it's fun. but ooh. I just feel like
it was baseball.
It's not. Yeah, I know. I know. I was being sarcastic. It is baseball. Like, he clearly has a baseball and a baseball glove, and it's in New York City. It's in Queens. Like, I just like being contrary about baseball because I feel like it's sort of played out. Even though I did back that baseball Kickstarter.
I thought you were accidentally revealing the answer to your own conundrum.
No, I'm just more of an, you know, the Super Bowl's coming, Steve. Those Canadians don't understand. They're all Grey Cup fanatics. But yeah, exactly. They're just into the Grey Cup. But you and I know, Steve, the Super Bowl is where it's at.
Remember those Doug Flutie Grey Cup days?
Well, to be fair, the Grey Cup is actually older than the Super Bowl.
Now, you grew up in northern New York, though, and northwestern New York, kind of, and I went to college in Buffalo, so I saw my share of Grey Cups and Canadian football games and stuff, so I'm not hating.
I've watched a bunch of that. I remember, actually, it was just this year. It was on ESPN. One of those was showing one of the games. I'm like, oh, yeah. I forgot all the, you can have forward motion pre-snap. Makes it kind of lively. But the three down thing is very disturbing.
And it's always going to be 2 feet down for me. I'm sorry. All right. Phil, we took all this time to have an indie comic book noise to be able to hear what you've been reading, and here we are taking all your steam.
Oh, I was going to apologize to Andrew. I'll try to get my Image books pre-ordered so that when he buys those number ones, even if they're like $50 now, I'll have them here.
Hmm. You were the one that was all belly aching about it on the Twitter machine. So I'm like, well, I better buy it. So this will normally I ask what would Phil do at the comic shop, but
that never tried to say good.
What would Kevin do for once. But anyways, Phil,
is that $50 Canadian?
It's like 100.
Possibly. I don't know.
So I got a stack of 6 books. Since
oh,
here.
All right. Oh, here we go.
Here's a big old fuck you. So I got that title, Aminosity, that I really like, with the animals that can, like they can talk and stuff, and like they kind of go to war with the humans and stuff. They came out with a one-shot called The Rise, and basically it just sets up a new threat, kind of like as if the governor got a one-shot in The Walking Dead kind of thing. So a new threat that they're going to have to face, which is basically another group of animals that kind of use machines on their body to kill humans and stuff. Nice. And they're very organized and stuff. I read the last issue of Chew, number 60. I get, was that the last issue, Kevin?
Yeah. I'm like 5 issues behind on Chew.
Okay, I haven't read the last 30. I have to pick up the last one, which is a beautiful issue because there's no ads. It's just comic, like cover to cover. And a big gatefold cover, too, and a second cover inside.
And, so are you reading it, Phil? Did you read it, or you wait until you read the other 29?
Well, I just went ahead and read it, because who knows when I'll get into Chew again, because there's so much stuff. But I did really like the first 30 or whatever. I loved it. But this is, I'm not going to ruin anything, because it's the last issue, but basically it's just kind of an epilogue issue, a jump ahead in time, and I enjoyed it just as it is, just since I knew enough about Chew. So then there's Devil's Dues, first comics line. This is a double-sized issue called Galaxy for Hire, which is basically it's a group of girls, like aliens and stuff, and it's just like Firefly mixed with Guardians of the Galaxy. And this is a highly recommend for me. I had a lot of fun with this issue. The art is very indie-like, but basically there's two sisters on the team, and one ends up going working for the Army of the Galaxy, whatever the hell you call them, and kind of betrays the team, and they end up running into each other again in the future and like a few years later, and the army kind of betrays the sister that's working for them and everything, and they get caught up in this big war kind of thing. But it was a really fun comic. Dollface, Tales of the Ball-Jointed Witch Hunter by Action Lab. This is a spin-off from Zombie Tramp, and Zombie Tramp is in this issue too. This is another double-sized issue. But basically, it's these two perverts, this guy and girl. They want to make a sex doll, so they end up kind of screwing up and a witch hunter from back in the day ends up getting into this like doll-like body, and she hunts witches in our time. It was all right, but Nothing I'd highly recommend, though. And then there's Dante, which I never thought I'd pick up another Top Cow comic. But this was another double-sized issue, but kind of a one-shot setting up the character, which is basically a hitman. That kind of one of his cases, he ends up killing a kid by accident. So someone curses him. So he wakes up with all these tattoos all over him, and he has to start doing good deeds according to what tattoos he has, and then they'll disappear. And it was surprisingly very good. I liked it. I don't think I'd pick up the rest of the series, but just this one issue alone, I liked it more than I thought I would. And then last is Cinderella Serial Killer Princess by Zenoscope.
I saw that in the store.
Yeah, it's...
I already did my Zenoscope purchase for the year, so...
This one would have been good. I actually really like this one. It's basically in the last event, which is still not over, but I already know what happens, obviously, because it's all the issues that come after it already came out. But she sacrificed herself with the heroes to save the world. And then they kind of just forgot about her, even though it hasn't even happened yet. So she's all bitter and ends up coming back to life from this stupid character named Voodoo. But basically, if you she's exactly like Harley Quinn. Like, that's her character. But as I said, it's called Serial Killer Princess. And basically, it's her getting revenge on all the heroes, like, because she's really pissed off at Robin Hood. And I didn't think they would go this far, but she's literally killing all the heroes of the universe, like, in these really crazy serial killer ways. And it's funny too sometimes, and I don't know, I just really like her. But it's crazy, the characters are killing off, like, pretty much all of them are almost dead. So I don't know if this is going to end up being fake or a dream, like, or if this is how they're kind of cleaning up some of the shit characters or whatever that came out recently. But pretty much, like, even the Xavier type character, she or whatever his name is, in the first issue of Grim Fairy Tales, Andrew. Even he got cut in half.
Yeah, well, now that they've made him Legacy, they can just have the daughters take over.
But nobody's dead now. She was,
yeah, but they'll just put a different hairstyle on him, and that'll be like, oh, you forgot my cousin. Blah, 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 blah.
Like, basically, the only one left right now is Robin Hood, the Red Riding Hood character, and then the Grim Fairy Tales girl, Selene, or whatever her name is. That's about it. Which is good. I'm glad. I hope it is real. So that way they do clean it up.
Kevin, got any more?
Yeah, I said, what would everyone else do? Like, what do they like to read? And I was like, I know, Dynamite Zero issues, right? Uh-oh. Like, you did the Red Sonja, and I don't know if people did a Vampirella sometime.
Yeah,
probably some other book.
25 cents. How much was it?
Yeah, the 25 cent one. Oh.
Okay.
It was actually 0 cents for me, so. Because I noticed that the Walking Dead 25-cent issue came out this week as well, but that's still 25 cents. But this one, it was 0 cents, so I'm like, well, I might as well give this a try. Like, you have Paul Cornell and Jimmy Broxton. I think they worked on one of those British DC books. Where they had they came up with 100 superheroes that were British or something. What was it? Knight and Squire? It must have been Knight and Squire. Anyhow, that's probably a few years back, so I don't know. People have probably already forgotten about those characters already.
There's been two reboots since then.
Yeah, probably. I've literally... So I've read very little Vampirella. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 series ago I read a Vampirella number one.
Vampirella fan. I haven't been reading the new stuff, but the old stuff I was like.
And now you're going to tell me that no one else read this, and I'll be like, ah.
No, I didn't notice it.
I have it, but I haven't read it yet.
Phil, you did inspire me a little bit. I did buy a couple of random issues of Action Lab books. I bought Vampy Blade and Tomboy. Just some random issues.
Okay, yeah, I didn't.
But I haven't gotten to them yet. But I just
wanted to get them. Wasn't there a Dollface or something?
That's a different one.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt like that. That was rude of me. Bad Andy.
Rude's okay.
No, I don't know where this fits in or if it even fits in. Like, I couldn't even tell you if this is, like, the usual MO. But basically, some people are just wandering around through this mysterious land, and someone or something is after them. And they're like, oh, like, this treasure or this place is where we need to go. And this place is actually the place that houses, like, Vampirella. And they pretty much just sacrifice themselves so she will wake up. So she wakes up, sees this, there's like this book they left around for her, because they're like, I don't know what their original plan was. Like, I guess they thought they were going to survive or whatever, and they'd be able to like fill her in on what's occurred, like why, where she is, where she is or whatever. I don't know.
Is she in a bathing suit or pants?
This is the zero issue, right?
Yeah, sorry, she's in the traditional outfit.
Yeah, because I got this one too. Sorry about that. I spaced out for 2 seconds. You're talking about the Paul Cornell, Jimmy Broxton.
Yes.
Zero issue, 25 cent dynamite.
That's the one.
I love these quarter comic books. They keep this up. I keep buying.
Yeah, you just never read the rest of the series.
Guess what?
I admit it's a loss leader.
So. Guess what, yeah. Andrew? Kevin got it for free.
Oh, that's it. I'm demanding my money back. I want my 25 cents back.
Mine is zeros and ones, so you're actually ahead of the game because, you know, what am I going to do with zeros and ones?
Yeah, but they're your zeros. Yeah, but that means you can have any comic you want and just rearrange those zeros and ones. But this Jimmy Broxton, I was not familiar with him. I think he did really great, Kevin. What did you think?
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember, I think the work was probably a little less polished. I don't, like, I remember enjoying it on some DC stuff, but not as much as this stuff. But it's been a few years, so his style is,
it
like,
was DC stuff, so.
Or whatever.
You know.
Had works cut out for him.
But this book that Vampirella has like all her previous adventures like over the years. Because there's one image on like this page in this tomb that's like her, you know, full suit costume where she didn't have anything revealing.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
Where she goes to Hollywood, or at least the first issue.
So I assume all these other pictures are from like one of her other reboots or volumes or whatever, and it's one of those things where it's like, oh, is this all true? Have all my adventures been true, or are they like, I don't know, some fantasy or some other crazy reboot stuff that I guess they're gonna touch on?
We gotta have a way to reboot the continuity and take it in and have fun with it, so I think that's fine. I mean, you can't expect the readers especially some of us that didn't follow from the beginning to keep every twist and turn. So I like that they're just saying, yeah, some of that stuff might have happened. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it did. Like, we're not throwing it. We're not new 52-ing it, but we're also not saying that it's necessarily in continuity or whatever. But it's fun to introduce that ambiguity where that way this team will be like, well, this is our Vampirella. You know, you'll either like it stands on its own or it doesn't. And if you don't like it, don't worry, they'll reboot. You know, when this thing bombs out, they'll reboot it with someone else later on.
I gotta say, though, my favorite image out of that is the 50s, 60s weird sci-fi world. Like, I don't know how that works out with Vampirella, but I'm like, that's awesome.
For me, I don't know. It's gonna, people are gonna say I'm crazy, but I get kind of like a retro Neil Adams feel almost to it. Kevin, how crazy is that? Talk to me.
Is that crazy?
I don't know.
I don't know.
You're supposed to be the entree to the listener to ground me and make sure I'm not saying ridiculous things like I want to do.
Hmm.
Normally they just have my own bizarre ramblings, but now you can check me when I make bold statements like that.
The other weird thing I wanted to ask you about then, they have mature and adult titles on Comixology, but you have to pay for them. So I assume like everything is there, but since they made this free, everything that's would be swearing is blanked out in this digital copy.
Really? There are some black boxes, which I assume is supposed to be expletive, unless it was just some weird choice, but they completely black it out so I can't tell.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So I don't know what, you know, the we're going to plant a snake amongst the bastards and black box them up.
Yeah, because I was thinking, well, because I didn't pay for it and anyone could download it, I'm thinking, well, they must have censored this, because if you paid for it, I'm thinking there's no reason. Like, that's their verification for age, right? If you pay for it, pretty much.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking, well, if I paid for this, then I assume that I would get the uncensored copy.
Nope.
No, I mean, maybe you don't. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I bought the regular one. But I also think they want to... I wouldn't be surprised if they're also trying to go back to that, hey, this is like the old-timey Vampirella, where it's going to be cheesecakey, but not smutty in that way, yeah. Or not explicit. You know, walk in that line that, and sort of reinforce that, yeah, you know, it's edgy, but it's not crazy, weird, pornographic type. But would make it understood. I have no preference either way, but I think it's smart to sort of lay the groundwork for, well, yeah, she's going to be an attractive woman in a bathing suit type outfit, but it's also not going to, you know, she is going to be having that bathing suit on. Or if not, there'll be strategic shadows or smoke or fog or whatever. Making, I'm coming, you bleep. Oh, that one actually left the ED in it. So
yes, it did.
I'm not sure.
Erectile dysfunction?
That one I have more. Yes. Well, if you're... Vampirella doesn't do it for you, I guess. And also, does yours have the huge ad for the Greatest Adventure comic, Kevin?
No, mine has the Dynamite Digital exclusive content where you see the pages in black and white.
Hmm. Yes, and it has a discussion of the Z Nation, a prequel to Sci-Fi's number one scripted series.
Don't have that, but I have the other covers that are, I think... Who is this? J. Scott Campbell, maybe? I'm not quite sure who the other cover artists are here.
According to the interior, people
would go crazy over that.
Philip Tan, Joseph Michael Linzer, and J. Scott Campbell.
Okay.
Where the which is a, I'm guessing I do not have. That's not J. Scott Campbell. I'm not sure which cover I have, but it's definitely not. I don't think it's. I guess it, if I had to guess, I'd say Philip Tan, but I'm not familiar with Linzer, so I don't know. I know this is bad on me.
I like it when they say
like A, and then you look at the cover, yeah. And it's like, oh, this is the A cover, because that's how it helps me know who's who. But
I would assume the Linzer cover is the one with the eyes with the fire and the...
That sounds like
then
Linzer.
I must have.
Yeah.
You know, his character is Dawn with the tear. And he does a lot of that really heavily colorful type work in the.
Then that has got to be.
It looks like charcoal or something. That looks like.
Because the cover I have almost looks like it's out of anime or something. It's like her outfit is turning into bats, kind of. Maybe there's just bats around it.
Oh yeah. That's the main cover for the digital version.
Okay, no, that's the one I have. Then inside, and then they have a promo for Z Nation, written by series creator Craig Engler and like fan this. Favorite Fred Van Lente. Although they don't mention the artist, it's funny how they promote by writer almost exclusively in their little promo box. Like Vampirella is Paul Cornell, Greatest Adventures Bill Willingham, James Bond by Benjamin Pierce. It's just interesting that they don't choose to feature the artist in the little blurb. I mean, on the big thing they do for the Great Adventure, it's like a 4-page ad for the thing.
But so I've seen some things in previews now for the Greatest Adventure, and I thought, well, that's a decent idea, but like if you're not promoting the artist, like maybe it's, you know, dynamite art.
Right. Well, I mean, in the four page, yes, but in the little blurb boxes, they always feature the writer, which I think is poor. Because not only is it not equitable, but it also just reinforces that stereotype.
Yeah.
The Dynamite, you know, isn't going to look good. But there is a big Vampirella art edition, Jose Gonzalez. I don't know if you guys saw that. But that looks pretty sweet. I don't have any of the Dynamite artist editions.
I just have the IDW ones.
Yeah.
I have the Frank Thorne first Red Sonja one.
And I have the correction. Was the Walter Simonson Aliens, was that IDW or a different company?
It was
before the artist edition started.
Yeah. I forget.
But it's an artist edition.
Yeah.
I have that.
Because the original was Heavy Metal who put out that original Aliens. Yeah, I have that one too.
So I have that, but whatever comes. But that was before this artist edition. Because remember, it was the Rocketeer, which they never reprint. Oh, wait. They did reprint.
Well, there's just a few comic
book companies you can always trust when they say they'll never.
Well, I always laugh when someone says, this will never be reprinted. And I'm like, I don't believe them. I just say, okay, I'll wait 10 years.
So, I mean, unless there's some question with the rights or whatever, then you can see. But if it's just you own it or whatever, why would you? I don't know. People have to market their books the way they have to market them. I shouldn't be so judgy.
When you guys...
Valiant's going to prove you wrong, Andrew. That's origin story I wanted to read. I'm never going to be able to read it. They're going to really just stick it to me.
How so?
Well, it's my friend Vanlante too, so I was kind of interested, but it was a retailer exclusive, so I was like, oh.
Those retailers and their exclusives.
I know.
Just because they buy
a
bunch of comics.
They're the real customers. They're the real fans, not us, not the readers that order the stuff.
Yeah, those guys
support the real people that are on the front lines.
Hey, they order thousands of comics every month. How many do you order, Kevin?
Exactly. We know who the real dedicated people are. I tell them to order one copy, and they're just like, one copy, son?
Just have to make a right-hand turn at Winnipeg.
Yes.
When you don't have these problems when you go to panelsyndicate.com.
Yeah.
Well, the website could be down or something.
When you're there checking out Barrier, check out the other book that Panel Syndicate offers. It's not by Vaughn and Martine. It's by Albert Montes. And there's 5 issues out of it so far, and every one of them's great. They are In a Common Universe, loosely tied together with common elements, but it is basically a like an anthology almost. Each issue is a different story, and it's entitled Universe, the Periodical of Cosmic Wonder. And again, pay any price, has cool like editorial strips, and on the letters page, he draws the people saying the letters like little aliens. It's pretty funny. But the first issue I talked about way back on Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 353, at the end of December 2014. And the first story was about like this corporate-sponsored time-traveling astronaut and his little pyramid-shaped robotic companion, and how they're traveling through time to see the beginning or the end of time, and they kind of mess things up along the way. Issue 2 is a tale of mechanical heartbreak because robot companions made by the same company who was funding the time traveling research. So there's the connection. Well, that's what it becomes. These robot companions have kind of become the norm, and you can get different levels from anywhere from a maid up to like a marriable companion, basically. The problem is the robots start killing their companions, and it seems like it's like almost out of too much love. Like one fucks his partner to death, And another one, like, hugs the girl. He loves her so much and then cracks her spine. And another, like, loves the girl's foot so much. He loves her feet. He's going to give her the best massage. And he just, like, cracks her feet right off because he wants to have them always, you know. And the head programmer has a robot companion herself. And all of a sudden, you know, she's like, mine isn't going bad. And then all of a sudden it does. And she's got to kind of get to the bottom of it. Ends up being a whole sabotage thing. And interesting.
So it's like a zombie comic, but robots?
Yeah, kind of. But there's this whole thing of loving too much and how this all happened. I mean, you add a little bit of your blood to the robot to have it bond with you. And what happens to the... Oh, it's cool. It's very sci-fi. The third issue is the story of a team of scientists that are on this handshake mission to the stars. And also set by the company who we've heard about in the other two issues. And they reach the target planet, and there's, like, no life there. And they're like, oh, this is a dud. But the atmosphere is reading okay, and one of the guys takes off his mask for a second. And they're like, you idiot, put your mask back on. You don't want to be contaminated or anything. And he's like, oh, it's fine. And he all of a sudden, like, has, like, a trip, like a psychedelic experience, and drops to the ground. And while he's in this state, he's contacted by the aliens who do live there. And they used to be physical and corporal, but they've, like, transcended, you know. They're, like, pure energy now, and they are so enlightened and all this stuff. And they are something about this human breathing in the atmosphere has helped them be able to communicate with him. So they are want him to be their messenger of peace and harmony in the universe and all things and ever. But when he comes back to the ship, he decides to keep mum. He never wanted any of this. He never wanted to be this avatar, this harbinger of the global peace message or anything. So while other handshake missions to the stars that were also going on at the same time have brought back, you know, different types of contact that are, you know, almost the same as just discovering another country, as far as, oh, we'll have some trade, we'll have some shared information and stuff like that. Here's a connection that really could have changed the whole universe, but the guy decides to kind of keep mum, and he confides in the robot, and there's a whole thing that goes on, but I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but it's that kind of twist. The fourth story looks back at a time when those transcendent beings that transcended their corporal body were becoming, quote-unquote, enlightened, and it turns out that it wasn't exactly voluntary for everyone, and it's the story of, like, a runner survivor who's trying not to be forced to leave his corporal state and to try to keep his race alive. And it's crazy because the whole end, there's this crazy explosion that happens, and it's the impact of the time traveling astronaut from the first issue crashing into the planet, and then there's contact with an encounter between those. It's cool. The last most recent issue has a bit of a dark tone. It takes place before the first issue, where the company, Wortham Industries, and you still see Mr. Wortham. He's a floating head, Kevin. He's a floating head with, like, a hologram body, but he's just, like, in a ball, like a floating orb that is connected to, like, a big mechanical arm that moves the floating, you know, goldfish bowl with his head in it around the room, and then hologram body falls around underneath. It's pretty cool. But they were still working on the time travel stuff, and there's an accident happens in the lab, and one of the techs gets affected, and you're trying to talk to her, and it's weird, and then you realize that if you flip ahead a couple of pages, what she's saying is a response to what they're saying to her now. She's, like, living 90 seconds in the future. And she goes home, and she's got a husband, and he tries to make the best of it and figure out a way that they can communicate and line things up. And unfortunately, the problem is increasing, the distance of time between her and now. She's living further and further in the future. And they adapt for a while. He's figuring out a way to, like, time it so that they can, like, both be in bed at the same time and even have some intimacy and that sort of stuff. But it ends up just being like, they can try to make some money off of it. She knows what's going to happen in the future. She could be a fortune teller. Am I going to die when I go on this trip tomorrow? Am I going to do this? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? Will I get the job? That sort of thing. She can tell you because she's living in the future. But the whole thing goes bad when she starts having flatter and flatter affect. And she's now living 2 years in the future. And ultimately, you see the scene where her husband gets killed. And she's actually been living with him physically, but she's already been without him for 2 years. So she's been grieving him all that time. And he's been seeing her grief even though he's still with her. Oh, it's crazy stuff. It's mind-bending. But most of the stuff has a whimsical aspect to it. And Montez promises that the next issue, issue 6, will be a lot more fun and games than that one, which was a little bit of a downer. But it was still cool sci-fi. This is a good series. Pay any price at thepanelsyndicate.com for Universe. Doesn't that sound good? Come on. Who doesn't like sci-fi anthologies that are well done and with the same writer-artist, so you get, you know, that kind of consistent vision?
Yeah, if you like them. That's obviously the key part of that anthology bit, because normally the anthology is the different stuff. But if you like the team, why wouldn't you like more of it?
Yeah, I mean anthology as far as they're different stories in within the same universe kind of thing that have the connection. But it's cool. It's more like a serial, a periodical. I guess it describes itself when it says it's the periodical of cosmic wonder. Got anything left in the coffers?
Well, I got either a book or kind of a question.
Oh. A book. We'll go with the book.
Screw you guys. All right, so I got to go a few weeks ago. I made it back to Pasadena, and I love the Comics Factory because they just have the most floppies ever. They have like a whole wall of Marvel, DC, and like Image, and some of the, and then the other wall is just all the indies. So I just grab random books. The problem is you don't know how old or new, because sometimes they'll be up on that big wall for, you know, 6 months or longer or whatever. So I picked up from Red 5, The Rift. You guys know Red 5, right? From Robo, Atomic Robo?
Yeah, they used to publish Robo.
What happened?
Robo went indie or...
Dark Horse, right?
No.
No?
No, they have their own website. They're separate on Comixology now. It seems like they're totally... like running their own ship now, but their printed editions come out through IDW.
Oh, well, I better enjoy this Red 5, because I'm like, for me, they were pretty much synonymous with Atomic Robo, and that was, I mean, I've read a few books from them, but this is The Rift, and it's Don Hanfield and Richard Rayner are created and written by artist Leno Calavero and colorist Rodrigo Fernandez. And this is a time travel sort of sci-fi story. So Steve might be right up your alley. And what it happens is actually I've just heard a funny story about kind of, this is a pretty common, I guess, one of them conspiracy things. So it's an interesting take on it. This mother and son are driving, you know, they're starting out at moving out and they're in rural Kansas and they see a plane crash. But the plane that crashes is a World War II fighter. And they go and they rescue the pilot out of it.
Captain
and
Midnight.
The pilot's like, lady, you know, what are you doing here? I'm in the middle of the Philippines or Japan or wherever. You know, he thinks he's in Burma. You know, he was like, hey, I just shot down a Zero over there. And then she's like, you're in Kansas, man. And so she takes him to a doctor. And obviously they like handcuff him to the bed because, you know, he seems crazy. But then again, it seems weird. And the little boy goes in and talks to him when the mom's out talking to the nurse because they're trying to figure out what's going on. And the guy gives him like the name of his squadron and his squadron leader and all that stuff. So the kid sequesters it away. And then he and the mom are leaving and the kid's like, look, we got to try and find it. It's not that much further out of the way. We're on the road, we're moving anyways, and, you know, obviously they're going to do it because that's what you do. And so when they're going to that small town and cut to the wreck site, we're like, the feds take over the site. and they're trying to find this pilot and this parents because they got to shut it down because something is wrong, you know. They always, it's not a conspiracy unless the government gets involved to shut it down. You know, like that's part, it's like the X-Files or whatever. So, meanwhile, they go to the police station. The guy's obviously not there because, you know, he would have died a long time ago. And they see a photo of the pilot, you know, an old-timey photo. And they're like, whoa, you know, maybe there's more to this guy's story. And so then the government scientists are there and they're like, we have to collect everything. We have to shut this down. So the tension's going to be, you know, obviously they want to track everybody down and find out what really happened and how does this time wormhole work and what's going on. So just one of those tight, I mean, it's one of four. So you could probably hold out for the collected edition. I mean, for all I know, it might, oh, let's see what the indicia says. First printing, January 2017. So it's still pretty new. Okay. Like I said, I don't always know. You know, you're going in and buying the books. You don't know how new they are or whatever, but it's fine. I thought it was a fun setup. I mean, but certainly I understand if people are like, well, it's a smaller publisher. Maybe I'll wait and make sure it comes out.
Did you guys read the Star Bastard book?
I did.
I did. Oh, I forgot about, yeah.
Yeah.
I read that one.
I like how the company logo looks is reminds me of Top Cat.
Star Bastard is a book that was kickstarted for its first and its second issue Kickstarter just finished successfully, I should add, and it is published by Bin Cat Press, which Star Bastard is its only book. They seem to be symbiotically tied to each other. Both Bin Cat Press and Star Bastard have Facebook pages as well. And you can purchase Star Bastard number one on Gumroad digitally for a buck. And hopefully number two will end up there as well. The first issue was last year in 2016. And like I said, the Kickstarter just recently finished for the second issue. It was like over 200% funded as well. And I mean, Star Bastard made me think of a lot of different other types of stories and characters and things, but in a fun kind of way. And with the, I mean, it's a kind of an edgy book in that there's, you know, cursing in the dialogue and whatnot. I think Star Bastard basically is being what Marvel would like Star-Lord from the Guardians of the Galaxy to aspire to. If they could have that character be this character, like that's what they're shooting for.
The lead, and it's a, besides Star Bastard, is Kitty Pryde, I guess.
the lead character's name is Greaves, and he's a conniving, backhanded weasel of a scoundrel. He's like a Han Solo with a knack for ladies, like a Kirk or a Bond. You know, it just a few pages in, you already kind of know he's that kind of a guy and sort of what he's capable of, it seems. And his associates are Max the pilot and Molly the weapons specialist. And they and their cat travel aboard their ship, the flame-detailed Ghost Huffer. A pretty cool little vessel. And the aliens and the mercenary band of travelers together also kind of gave off a bit of a, like a Dark Horse Star Wars Legacy kind of vibe for me, which isn't the bad thing. I mean, like, you know, again, they're scoundrels and mercenaries, and they're out there in the big bad universe trying to get by. The first issue opens with the Ghost Huffer on the run and under heavy fire from this pursuing armada. And it turns out that Greaves has on board the Emperor Moog's most favored and beautiful daughter, and he's been, like, defiling her since they left. How he ends up returning the girl and making his escape is, I thought it was pretty clever and entertaining and certainly in line with the character being dickish, kind of jettisoning her back at him so that they lower the shields and the sequence of events that has to happen to enable their escape.
Well, and I thought that was an airlock for a second there.
Yeah, I know. I did too. I thought they were going to send a splat, a dead body through the air, but thank goodness not. And you get to see a little of the other characters, like Molly is a weapon. She's not just a weapon specialist. And Max is very ironically titled. You know, his name is kind of an irony since he's kind of the exact opposite. And then in the end, you get this badass reptilian-type bounty hunter that's going to be on their trail. I thought it was a cool first issue.
Spikes, Steve, though. Shoulder spikes. That's exactly how he designed, like, every villain before. So I got to appreciate that. Is it just me, or is the artwork sort of like, I got, like, a vibe like Stuart Immonen or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it felt almost Paul Pelletier-ish at times, and different. I mean, there's it's nice and clean and very professional. I should have mentioned the writer is Andrew Clemson and the artist is Jethro Morales, and they both do a nice job. I think it's well framed. The story, there's good beats to it. The dialogue is crisp enough. You totally feel like you know the characters by the end of the first issue, and the storytelling by Morales is great. I mean, it's a good book. Certainly has the potential that whether they, you know, as a indie unit themselves, how, you know, if it's, I don't know what their potential for output is, but it certainly seems like these guys would be an interesting crew to check back in on and see what hijinks they're up to.
It also felt like you got a complete story. I mean, it's setting up for the rest, but sometimes, you know, particularly with newer books, I often feel like you really are just getting the opening chapter in a sense, where this felt much more like, oh, I mean, you could read more, or you could be like, yeah, this was good.
Yeah, when the second issue comes out, I don't think you have to read the first issue to remember where the heck you are in the story. I mean, it was a good little introduction. All right, anything left to get off your chests?
You guys see those Image 25th anniversary, like, tribute covers to, like, classic and modern classic covers?
Won't they be late for, like, 10 years?
like some of them didn't come together so well, because you would have, like, I don't know, East of West was, like, was doing, like, I think one of the Liefeld properties. I'm trying to remember which one, if it was Brigade or something like that. But the one I really liked was Monstrous had one for Spawn number one. And I was like, ooh, if I happened to run across that, like, that would be another monstrous thing I would like to possess.
Good old Monstrous.
I know, that book is so good.
I can't wait for the next trade. I really like how, and like, in some ways I was initially disappointed that they went with a trade and not hardcover, but the trades are, like, nice thick paper, and the covers have a good feel to them and a nice texture. I really like it.
I'd totally expect, like, a deluxe trade, like, maybe after a year or something like that.
My mother
got the first trade for Christmas, actually, and just started it.
It has a whole wall in my comic store. Like, they have a shitload of trades laid out, because I guess it does really well there.
My mother even saw the trade sitting on the sideways on the shelf or on the coffee table or something, and picked it up and took it home with her and returned it a couple of days later and said, oh, that was good. I think she's read a couple of Marjorie Liu's novels.
When I was saying before the earlier that it was Saga, and then, like, the next Saga was Seven to Eternity and God Country, I should have put Monstrous in there when they were doing the whole trying to recapture the, because Monstrous deserves to be in that company too.
All right, guys, let's make that another episode here of Indie Comic Book Noise. What do you think?
All right. Onward to the epic, legendary, classic 400th episode.
We're on the final approach. It might take us 2 weeks to do 5 episodes, or it might take us 5 months.
I think it'll be October.
It'll be this year, maybe.
Hey, folks. Just a quick postscript ending before we get you back to the music. Wanted to announce that I've backed a new Kickstarter. So if you go to www.kickstarter.com and look for King Bone Press, yet another subscription extravaganza, give it a shot. It ends on Sunday, March 5th. So if you are a Kickstarter type, please view the page. We've talked about King Bone Press a couple of times. I like their books, and I think it's worth checking out. So I'm going to return you to your regularly scheduled ending. Thank you.
could be headed for the serious strife. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow they'll be held to pay.
The afterlife could be headed for the serious strife. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow they'll be held to pay.
The people listen attentively, I mean about future calamity. I used to think the idea was obsolete until I heard the old man stamp on his feet. Where eternally fire is applied to their body. Teeth are extruded and bones are ground and baked into cakes which are passed around.
In the afterlife, you could be headed for the serious strife. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow there'll be hell to pay.
The A and the T and the I O N. Lose your face, lose your name, then give it to the flame.